This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Hello guys and welcome back to another episode of Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Shamar today as usual, and in today's episode we are looking at the Promare movie for this week. Promare is a movie that I know is rolling out in the West a lot more. I know that it's coming out in cinemas more and more throughout the West. It's rolling out and I want to do a review of it as I've actually had the chance to see it. So in today's episode we'll be looking at the movie. Obviously I'll try my best to be avoiding spoilers for the majority of the episode. When there are spoilers, I'll put that later in the episode and then I'll obviously tell you when they are, so you can skip that part of the episode. But Promare has been a movie that I've wanted to watch for a very long time. I've wanted to watch Promare basically from the beginning of the year, since I heard about it when I saw the trailers. I was like, this is the movie for me, I need to see this. And here I am finally in November. But anyway, here is the episode for this week. That is episode 20 of Gaten the Mecha, the Promare review. So, just to reiterate, this part of the episode will not contain spoilers. I'm going to keep it as reserved as possible and as sort of general as possible while giving you a good review of the movie before you go and see it, or maybe you've already seen it and you just want another opinion on it. So feel free to obviously listen to this part of the show and spoilers if you've maybe seen the movie already, or you just want some more insight into the movie, then stick around for the latter end. But the majority of this episode is focused on non-spoilers, so don't be too alarmed. I think a good way to start today's episode is just to provide some context in regards to this movie, as there is a decent amount of it. So first thing, this movie is made by the directors and creator of Kill la Kill and Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann, Hiroyuki Imaishi, as well as Kazuki Nakashima. Two guys that used to actually be in Gainax, they used to work for Gainax and then left to go to Studio Trigger, the studio that has now put out this movie. Studio Trigger generally isn't known for releasing loads of anime together. If you take a studio like A1 Pictures, for example, that's known for quite a lot of anime throughout the years, Trigger, I feel, drops one piece of work or like two pieces of work a year. Nothing too extreme, actually. If we take last year, we had Darling in the Franxx and Gridman. This year, we have Promare. A few years before, we had Kill la Kill. We've had Kiznaiva. Those are sort of the big noticeable works. And then Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann, although not being part of Studio Trigger, is known under the Nakashima works, even though it was a part of Gainax. Kazuki Nakashima, probably now what I would at least call a legend in the anime industry, and by that I mean someone that is very differentiated when it comes to writing style and how they sort of portray and execute narrative. On the podcast, I know we talk a lot about Iyasama as a result of analyzing all these Attack on Titan arcs. Similar to Iyasama, I find Iyasama a very interesting writer in the way that he writes in a sort of layered style, building arcs upon one another and then sort of paying them off. Nakashima is also a very different sort of writer, not one that you can simply place into a box, as he is probably one of the most out-of-the-box writers out there, as he doesn't really give a regard to rigid structure or anything like that. If anything, he's just free-flowing, and he just goes for it in the way I view it. You can argue that that is fancy in itself because it's so out-of-the-box, and it's not really a thing that too many writers do in the anime game from what I've seen. After last episode, I'm doubting what I've seen, but you can tell that Nakashima's writing isn't something you can come across twice. There aren't many, if any, writers that do a similar thing. The closest thing I can find to a Nakashima work, or at least one that comes from these two people, is maybe Fooly Cooly even. Fooly Cooly being an anime written by Yoji Enokaido and Kazuya Tsuramaki. That is the closest I can get to that anime, at least to that style that Imaishi and Nakashima produce. But on course to Promare, Promare is the baby of these to people when it comes to work. Again, take that as you will. And that leads me right to my first point, and that is that work or those works shine right through Promare, particularly the likes of Killer Kill in terms of structure. Killer Kill, I would say, is a good sort of messy. You don't really know where the plot is going until the final episode. I feel like Killer Kill could literally have its credit scene in the middle of the show and end it as a joke, or it could end right at the end or right at the very beginning. Similarly to Promare, I feel like Promare and structure aren't really two things that they consider. Promare, again, is almost just as free-flowing as Killer Kill. Tekken Toppa Gurren Lagann has a bit more structure, so I'd be inclined to maybe push away from that one. But particularly Killer Kill, you can see it right through the work. If we talk on a visual perspective, I would say that there's some similarity. Not completely, and that, again, leads me onto another point about Promare. And that is that you're not going to find anything that looks like Promare. On the In The Moment segment, I believe last week, I spoke a bit about Promare and my opinions, just briefly for like a minute or two, and I ended up saying that you will never really find anything that looks like Promare. I stick by that. Promare is very different to most anime, if anything. It is very cinematic. I don't think you can really have an entire series that looks like that, mostly because of production costs. But also, it has something that you don't want to see too much of. So the length of the movie being around 1 hour 30 minutes, or I believe it's 1 hour 40, it's something close to that. It's nothing too long, so it's under 2 hours for sure. It keeps it special when you have that timing. But visually, it is very eye-popping. It comes out a lot. There are a lot of things going on the screen, but it's done very well in a way that it looks really beautiful right from the start to the very end. That's not to say that every single graphic is overdone and over the top, similar to the likes of, say, Killer Kill, as I've said all the time. It's not to say that they are all so high octane and high color. Color is a big deal in this show though, or anime, movie. But what I'm trying to say is that overall, there's a lot to feed to your eyes on within the 1 hour and 40 minutes you'll be in the cinema, or at least just watching this movie wherever you're watching it. As I'm still on this topic of visuals, I might as well say that there's a low poly style to Promare, and I think that is what distinguishes it from its counterparts like Killer Kill, Tekken Toppa Gurren Lagann, if you will, Kids Niva. If we're going as far as modern Trigger Works, Darling in the Franxx, those sort of things, the low poly style definitely separates it from the rest. Again, that adds that sort of cinematic feel to it. But one thing I really want to hone in on is how, okay, there's this sort of notion that 3D in anime is not inherently bad, but it is usually done not very well. There is proof for that, although one thing that we have to make clear is that there is a lot of 3D software that is used throughout anime in a way that you probably wouldn't even realize it, and it still looks flat on your screen, or quote-unquote flat on your screen. And then there's the quote-unquote 3D CGI plague, which is the sort of overly smooth stuff you see coming into the screen. If we take the classic example of Berserk, the modern Berserk sequel is known for that, for example. Or if we take a very recent movie that's surfaced, Human Loss, Ningen Shikaku, that's an adaptation for the Aoi Bangaku series. There's quite a stigma towards Ready amongst anime fans, or from what I know of, there are some anime that beat that trend. So if we take Hoseki no Kuni, that is almost the classic one known to beat the stigma that 3D is almost inherently bad in anime, or at least 3D CGI that we can notice as a consumer of anime, let's say that. Promare, similarly to Hoseki no Kuni, defeats that notion completely. It's very recognizable that this is a work that is full of 3D effects. It's meant to pop out, but it's done very well with this low poly style, because the low poly geometrics work with the whole idea of 3D, and it adds a sort of flatness to it, because everything feels like it's in triangles and squares as opposed to round and curved objects or surfaces. So when that is moving into the screen, out of the screen, it still maintains somewhat of a flatness, but it's not a complete flatness to the extent where it's, you know, just your average TV show or your average anime show, but it's not to the extent where it's feeling like an eyesore. That extends through the entire movie, throughout all the mechas and most of the characters which you'll be seeing and interacting with. So just to clarify on what I'm trying to say, it's really how everything on the visual perspective is working together. So the movement of these mechas, the nature of that being moving in and out of the camera constantly, is there is a lot of action in this movie. The idea of the Loeb Holly graphics, that works well with this motion that's occurring all the time, and that 3D element. Again, the animators did a very good job at making this all look very smooth and connected, and it has a uniform style rather than one bit that looks sort of weird in comparison to everything else. Everything looks similar and coherent, which makes me feel quite happy watching a movie that has all of this within it. Another thing is there's a good amount of difference in location, which I really do appreciate. There's a good amount of variation between the city environment, where a lot of the movie does take place, sort of the metropolitan urban environment, and some other places. Well, there's like a cave, there's a bit of a more deserty, snowy area. I like the mix-ups between all of those. It makes it feel a bit more refreshing, because yes, I'll be honest, a lot of this movie does take place in a city, and a city as cool as it can be, in a mecha anime where mechas are the main focus and mechas are flying everywhere, it does get a bit tiring when you're just seeing mechas fly through buildings and crash on buildings and that sort of stuff. So to change it up a bit, although again, as I've said, most of it does take place in the city, don't get that wrong, but there is a bit of variation within the environments nonetheless. The same thing, as I said, when it comes to the characters and character design and the low poly style, is just as consistent in regards to the environments as well. The environments, such as the cave environment towards the beginning of the movie, I do believe there's a snow biome. I could be very wrong, actually. But that place is, and there are some other caves. They all consistently look how the world that they wanted to create looks. Nothing is standing out throughout the entire movie. I couldn't say there was something that stood out to the extent where I was like, ooh, that doesn't really look good. It all looks uniform. So if you're going to judge this movie from a visual perspective, you're probably going to like all of it or like none of it. I don't think you're going to be able to find a certain part in terms of the art style and what's coming in and out of the screen and say it doesn't look good, unless you don't like the entire thing as a whole. With that being said, also, Sakuga is very prominent in this film, and there's just a lot of emphasis on it, as action is the main principle of this movie. It is an action movie overall, so I don't think, if you don't like action, don't go and see this movie, because a lot of it is action. But the action is very, very well done. Some of the best action I might have seen this year. Maybe in that top 10 list that probably won't be made, but in that 2019 top list, there is some great stuff in there. The first fight, there are fights right from the beginning, quite frankly. There's the fight you see in the trailer looks great. They really understand how movement works and also how to make a fight not appear as an instance. So I think this does occur in sort of some anime. And it's when a fight feels so isolated to the extent where it feels like you're only there for the fight and not the environment and the atmosphere. It just feels like this is not a specific example, because I do like this fight in anime in general. But if we take the classic example of Naruto and Pain, you know, it's basically an arena fight. The environment isn't a big deal in that fight. Again, I do like it. Okay, as it goes on, the environment becomes more of a greater factor. And if you cast your minds back to episode 4 of the podcast, I spoke about environments being used within fights and fight scenes, Shin versus Sakura being one of those. But if we push Naruto and Battle Shonen analogies aside, I'm not the biggest fan of using those, if I'm honest, but that was the only thing I could really think of to prove my point. We take Promare, and the environment is used just as much. The sort of opposition between the characters and the fact that, say, if there are multiple people in the battlefield, that will be used and factored in when it comes to creating a creative fight. The first one being my main example of that. Probably my favorite fight in the movie itself, because of the fact that it was able to utilize that almost as a gimmick. And I say gimmick in a good way, actually. If anything, I should say component. It uses that as a component to sort of make it more exciting. Not because of the fact that you have to take down X more amount of people, but How you utilize that to get to the quote unquote final boss, or what you do to just make things more spicy, spice it up somehow. And Promare does not disappoint in that area. Camera movement is also an amazing thing. I think this year has been a really good year for cameras. My main example being Vinland Saga. Wet Studio and everything just work that camera so hard. Same thing applies to Promare. And although I'd expect production values generally to be higher for a movie, this takes it to another level, and I'm impressed that it delivered what it was meant to deliver, being a high production value movie. I wouldn't expect anything less in regards to visuals when it comes to Studio Trigger. Studio Trigger in general, I think, isn't a studio you should sleep on when it comes to visuals. I don't really watch a Trigger film or a Trigger show and walk in saying, is this gonna look bad? I'm not too sure. I'm quite confident it's gonna look good. And that applies very much to the new Trigger movie coming out next year, BNA. I believe that stands for Brand New Animal. Visuals aren't really a concern when it comes to Studio Trigger. I think it just comes down to making a good narrative. And before we do speak about narrative in regards to Promare and themes within this anime, let's go to the Link Vivier Promare special for this week. The Link Vivier segment is very simple. If you're new here to the show, this is how it works. All I do is I go into my anime list, or MAL, and find the show which we're watching or the movie which we're speaking about, this week obviously being Promare, and then I look at the various voice actors that are available or the various voices, find one of the roles or multiple roles, and look at who they play in other anime or other shows. We just have a bit of fun with it, we find some fun facts, it's a great time. In today's episode, as we are talking about Promare and the movie is coming out, so I might as well just give you a host of Promare voice actors or roles and look at who else they play throughout anime. This first one, I feel like I spotted some sort of Easter egg. It's probably not an Easter egg, but it feels like a bit of a, not joke, but it feels definitely like a good reference when it comes to Trigger anime, as one of the voice actors that we'll be looking at today is very involved in Trigger anime already. This voice actor is Mayumi Shintani, plays a few roles, not too many, but a good amount of notable ones. Ironically, we were speaking about Fooly Cooly earlier today, and she plays Haruko from Fooly Cooly. Again, I kind of see the mix between the things, that whole idea of being completely wild, although the character which she plays in Promare, being Lucia Fex, doesn't really add up as much. I don't really remember her too much in the movie, but either way, it's a nice sort of hint to the other Trigger works. And on that note, on Trigger works, or the more popular Trigger works, she plays Takarada in SSSS Gridman, that is, I believe, Rika's aunt, the thigh meme girl's aunt. She plays her. She also plays Nonon from Kill la Kill, or Jakazure, the pink-haired girl in Kill la Kill that works under Lady Satsuki. So a nice good amount of intertextual reference between Trigger works. I like to see that. I don't know whether it was a nudge towards the people that have watched multiple Trigger works, but either way, it's a good amount of humor, and the voices are great throughout anyway. I wouldn't ever really complain about any voice actor on Link the VA, but these voices are definitely good and notable ones. The next role which we're looking at is a bit of a throwback in regards to the Gen the Mecha podcast. I believe it was episode 1, if I'm not wrong. Episode 1, it was in like the first 5 episodes. Ayane Sakura, the voice of Ochaku from BNHA and a few other anime, is back again for Promare, this time playing Aina Arudibit. I can't say that name, honestly. The thick pink-haired girl in this movie, I'm gonna regret saying that so much. But she plays her, really awesome, nice voice as well. Ayane Sakura, let's be honest, is a classic at this point. There aren't many anime where Ayane Sakura doesn't have a voice within, and this is also one of them that can't escape that. Some of the roles that I like, firstly, let's get to the Trigger work. Darling in the Franxx, she plays a supporting role somehow in Darling in the Franxx. It's not a major role at all. I don't really honestly remember this character. They have the code 9-0, I believe, or just like some cryptic name. But again, it's nice to see Trigger works being associated with other Trigger works. Other ones that I like, I've already said, I've already said the one for BNHA. One that I like that I don't think many people know is, although you don't hear the voice too much in the anime, I think it's mostly non-dialogue in this movie, but there's a short movie by Makoto Shinkai. It's an advert actually for a company, I forgot what company it was, called Crossroad. Crossroad is a beautiful short movie. Definitely recommend that. It's like 2 minutes of your time or something like that. She plays one of the main characters, only like two main characters in this guy and a girl, classic Shinkai narrative. She plays Miho in that movie. It's not really the voice I'm thinking of. Ironically, I'm saying I don't care about a voice or think about a voice in the VA, but it's really how Ayane Sakura is proving to be in almost everything. And it's really nice just to get that established voice actor or voice actress in this case throughout anime. She's almost like another version of Kana Hanazawa, almost in every show you can think of. The list is endless. Same applies to Ayane Sakura. Another role is from Quince, or the quintessential, if I can say that properly, the quintessential quintuplets. She plays Yatsuba from that show. Yatsuba having an amazingly cheerful voice, not shouty, but definitely enthusiastic. Also a great voice to listen to. All of the voices in that show are amazing to listen to. All the voices in anime are amazing to listen to. Let's just get that straight. But Yatsuba has a great voice, and I'm happy to hear that. Quint's second season coming out next year. So Ayane Sakura will be back on the mic. She's probably already on the mic producing that season, if it's not finished already. That is something to look forward to. There's just a quick one I want to touch on as well as we quickly race through these, as I don't want to spend too much time looking through one voice actor because I have a lot to get through. We're almost finished though. This one is Masato Sakai, and the only reason why I'm bringing this one in here is I feel like I'm cursed somehow, because I was speaking about the Aoi Bungaku series just in the sort of first part of the show when I was discussing Human Lost Ningen, and the way this show works, Mao likes to just curse me completely, and it shows me that this character has about 5 roles in the Aoi Bungaku series, all of them being main. So I'm kind of scared on that. I haven't watched the Aoi Bungaku series, actually. I know it's quite a grim series. It's not particularly a horror, from my understanding, but it's kind of like a thriller psychological series. So I do want to check out that anthology. And the final one, this is also quite an unusual one, but it's probably my favorite in Link the VA as a whole, maybe. And this is Kenichi Matsuyama. Mr. Matsuyama doesn't have many voice acting roles, if I'm honest. There are about 4 of them. But the one that makes it so interesting, or the one that's not on the list, is that they play L in the live action Death Note. When I talk about live action Death Note, I don't mean the Netflix live action Death Note. Let's get that straight. He is way more than that Netflix adaptation, let's be frank. He does not deserve to be in that. He deserves to be in something better. And when I say live action Death Note, I mean the 2006 Japanese Death Note live action movie. I just popped up some stuff on YouTube looking at this movie, and although live action has never really been my taste, whether it's made by Netflix or made in Japan or whatever, he definitely does capture L, and that comes from someone that, although I didn't watch the Death Note anime, I actually read the manga instead. You definitely still get a good sense of L, even like in the still shots. I can see that he's being L. He has the wide eyes, he has the hairstyle, he curls his back similar to how L would, he perches on the chair, he's fidgeting with everything. This guy is made to be L, and it's scary how much he resembles him when it comes to acting. I only found out because of the Mao comment section on his name or sort of profile. Thank you to the Mao comments for that, I really do appreciate it. But also, it just scares me how he, as a guy, I would not think of L, absolutely not think of L. And everyone's talking about L, I'm like, did he voice act L in the anime? But I'm like, he's not, he doesn't have L on his list. And then I check YouTube, and then I just see L's face staring right at me in the thumbnail. So overall, I'm rambling a bit, but well done to Kenshi Matsuyama for an amazing performance at L from what I can see. So that is it for the Link the VA segment this week. It has been a bit of a hectic one, but let's go forward and wrap up a bit on Promare. Let's look at some themes and narrative. back to the show. That I'm still dazed after Link the VA, but let's get right back onto it. So we were talking a bit before we went on that crazy segment. We were going to head into themes and narrative in regards to Promare. So the basic question here is, what does Promare have to offer in regards to themes, or what are the thematic elements we can extract from this movie? And also, how does this narrative work in regards to the sort of flow and construction of the entire movie? Does it work? Does it not work? Let's talk about that. I know that there's a criticism going around in regards to the movie saying that it lacks substance, and I can understand that. But one thing I want to make clear is that you have to think of Nakashima as a writer and the creative team in regards to Promare, and consider what else they've produced. So if we take the easy example that is Kill la Kill, Kill la Kill works in a way that narrative isn't its driving force. It's not necessarily the thematics and the philosophy of which we learn from Kill la Kill. No, it's not that. If anything, it's kind of about ditching the narrative. I don't want to go as far as saying it's an anti-narrative, because that gets complicated. But I think if we take Kill la Kill again, it's about this idea of just going for it. It's about, why not? Why the heck not do this? Why the heck not add this plot to us? Why the heck not make this innuendo? Why the heck not just jump right in there at the end of the story and then come right back at the beginning? I'm not seeing those happen in Kill la Kill, or Promare for that matter. But it's very similar to the way that Promare works, and things are thrown in there for the fun of it. And I often do have a criticism if you take the Shambles Reborn episode I did 2 weeks ago. I spoke about how things are thrown in Tokyo Ghoul Re for just being in there. We have to consider, obviously, someone like Tsuyoshida's writing and how that isn't necessarily a main factor from the style he creates or what seems to be the image that he tries to create. It's almost opposite for Nakashima. Nakashima's work is about throwing things in for the sake of it. It's throwing things in for the comedy of it, and that works in something like Promare. Easter eggs and jokes are made that actually work and don't feel like unnecessary ad-libs, because the whole motion of the movie is based on throwing things in and making them seem like jokes, which they are. This happens throughout the movie, and I think that is one of the things that makes it so fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, that's what I'm trying to say. The themes are simple, they're not complex ones that you have to get around, or there's philosophical content. It's none of that. It's a very simple message. It's the message of, we have to just overcome our differences, and also don't assume or take things for granted. Those are probably the two things, very simple lessons. But obviously, in practice, they are much more complicated. Not particularly in the movie, but in life as a whole. Not taking things for granted is a thing we do by accident all the time. Same thing when it comes to making assumptions and all those sort of things. Keeping differences between us. Although not all of us think we do it, on an implicit level, we do it from time to time. And I'm not calling you guys out in the audience per se. But that's the thing that Promare tries to bring to the forefront. And it's not in a pushy way. It's not like, this is an evident social commentary on society and modern society today. No, it's a very casual movie, but it does bring those messages forward, which I do respect. It doesn't feel completely baseless. So to call this movie lacking substance or just no substance whatsoever and it's just popcorn action, I think is a bit of an exaggeration. If anything, this movie, as I said when I was doing that mini Promare review in one of the Indie Moments segments, it's about getting what you're good at and increasing that as much as possible. It maximizes action, it maximizes the fun and the jokes that it's all about. It's just about being blasé, as Nakashima's works usually are. Logic, although is a thing, logic in Nakashima's sort of framework when it comes to writing isn't something that holds him down. If anything, he uses it to his advantage and defies it in a way that it's funny. I think that was the key to making Promare a really exciting movie that I enjoyed watching, because it didn't feel caught up in this realm of seriousness. It was free. It felt like a movie where anything could happen. And yes, part of it was predictable. Part of it was the whole antagonist sort of situation was very predictable. I predicted it basically from the beginning. But it's about the process and what was there. And what came after that wasn't a boring plot. It was an exciting one that led me to a goal that I expected, which is fine. I don't think predictability is something we should get too hung up on. Obviously, if the process itself is not fun whatsoever, then sure, blame predictability. But blaming predictability instantaneously for a narrative, I don't think is the way to go, because Promare being the example of that. Predictable as hell, it's quite easy to figure out. But after that, it just goes forward and makes a really fun plot, goes forward and just has some really fun moments throughout. It's about getting there, and visually and thematically on the way, it is still strong, and I enjoyed it a lot. One thing that I didn't touch on, I think that I should touch on now because I didn't really address it in the earlier section, and that's the music for this anime. The music also contributes to this very cinematic and dramatic feel that the anime puts forward. Dramatic not in the way that it's, again, in this realm of seriousness that I discussed, but it's one that feels alive. This is a movie, I feel, that Trigger crafted for the cinema. And if you're not seeing it in the cinema, that's okay, I guess. I can't stop you. But watching it in the cinema, I feel, would be so cool. Or it's the way to watch it, really. The sound from this movie is so dramatic. It's in your face. It's popping out. It feels very atmospheric. When I say atmospheric, I mean sort of you feel it rather than, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, just some average music coming behind the fights. It feels a part of everything. It's the glue to this movie, I think. Visuals and audio are two things that should go together. Audio-visual is a concept that I don't think anybody has not heard. The audio-visuals in this movie are very much equal, if anything. I don't feel like the audio is good, and maybe the movie or visuals aren't so good. There's a good balance between the two. The music works very hard for the visuals and vice versa. If we take the example of Superfly, Superfly is not the main theme of this movie. It's not the theme tune. It's the song in the trailer, I believe, or if not like the second trailer, something like that. That song is so dramatic. I listened to it a lot, like a lot. This has become, alongside Jono's theme, just one of those songs you have to listen to all the time. And it doesn't get old because it just feels so out there. You don't hear many songs like this. And I think Promare has made one of those. Not particularly a meme song, but a really good song that you just want to keep on repeat. It's just as memorable as, say, an OP. Similar to Jono's theme, I think Jono's theme could be the OP of JoJo's Golden Wind. Some people probably say no, stop there, Jamal, and maybe you're right. But not in this case, because if you haven't watched Promare, you're probably listening to this review. So I'm right in this case. Promare has an amazing soundtrack, and Superfly is probably like the equivalent of the OP to this movie. But just to wrap up here, as we're reaching the end, sort of. We're not there yet, though, but we're reaching the end. I don't think this movie is going to go under the label of quote-unquote deep anime you should watch. No, it doesn't fit under that label. But I don't know if you're going to watch Promare for that. I don't know what you're watching Promare for. I don't know what you're watching most trigger works for. With the exception of maybe, for me, SSSS Gridman. Again, some people deny that, but watch the ending and maybe you'll understand what I'm talking about. I don't think this is somewhat profound at all. But that's not what I watched the movie for. I watched Promare for a good time, to watch a celebration of animation, watching Trigger do what they do best and just make something that is splendid to watch and unique to watch. Promare is one of its kind because no one is this daring to make anime this daring. So I think the film makes a statement in itself that nothing is coming close to this in terms of looks than audio. So that's probably where most of my credit goes. It's the point that it's just so unique and away from everything else, it doesn't really have any competition. I don't want to wrap up the entire show yet because we still have the Indie Moment segment, which we're going to right now. But I hope you can sort of understand what I'm trying to say. If you are seeing Promare, whether that's this weekend, this month, or even next year, whenever you want to see this movie, just think firstly, why are you watching this movie? Similarly to almost any piece of media, think, why are you watching it? Are you watching it just on a whim and expecting something that is going to blow your mind and change your entire concept of cinematography and storytelling? Or are you watching it for a good time? Obviously, you can do either one of those. But just think, firstly, why are you watching this piece of media? That is something I think that can definitely be applied to Promare before you go in and say this movie is baseless. Sure, it looks good, but it is just bad in terms of plot and it's just boring. It's just action and explosions. Sure, but again, isn't that the point? Anyway, here is the In The Moment segment for this week. Let's just go into what I have been reading and watching. As I'm recording these on the same week, I've had to divide the In The Moment stuff for the action arc as well as this episode and probably even the next episode as I've had a busy time. I started a lot in 1 week, so I'm just spilling it all out there. Two things again, similar to last time, which I want to speak about. I might actually just leave it down to two things, although this segment is very fun, so I might not do two things. Don't listen to what I'm saying, although I still need you to listen, please. Anyway, so what I've been doing has been, so what have I been reading this week? The manga which I've been reading the most is Nozoki Ana. Nozoki Ana is probably a very ecchi manga, very on the ecchi side. So we're bordering H manga. Let's keep it at that. Also, just read this at your own risk, as there are some hentai-ish themes. So keep that in mind. Anyway, Nozoki Ana, I don't want to explain the plot because it's one that juicy, and also I don't want to get into the entire H manga thing, but it is a very good manga, or let's say a good manga. I don't want to overpraise it, as there are a few problems, I think, mostly because of my brewing anger with the protagonist, as I do in any anime or manga like this, similar to every harem anime. By no means am I comparing this to the average harem, because this is a story that I never saw coming. It's sleeping wars, guys. People are left, right, and center sleeping with one another. It's crazy. It gets crazy in this anime for sure. Or manga, sorry. Although there is an anime OVA, I might watch it. It's a 55-minute OVA. I don't know how many chapters it covers because this is an anime manga. I keep saying anime. This is a manga with about 117 chapters. Or 20 pages each, so that's a decent amount of content. You basically have story arcs with different girls, kind of, and Emeru, and obviously Kido being the main character, the guy. Things get crazy. It's a college story, so basically they're in art school. So think art school and think Sleeping Wars. It gets whack, but it's so fun and interesting, so I have to finish the manga because I'm not going to be able to sleep at night knowing that I didn't finish this. So that is my objective for this week. I'm probably going to finish it in a few days. I'm on like chapter 80 or 90. Crazy things have gone down. I'm probably like taunting you guys so much because I'm talking about how crazy the anime manga story. I'm taunting you guys how juicy this manga is without actually telling you the plot. But again, Mao is available for that. Check it out, and maybe if you are an etiologist, this is the manga for you if you haven't already read it. And on a lighter note, and in fact, one that is more in awe, I have watched The Millennium Actress. The Millennium Actress, I think now, has become maybe one of my favorite anime movies of its time, or of all time. That's a bold statement. I don't usually like saying this is my favorite of all time. Sure, when it comes to works that I've watched quite a while ago, take Steins Gate, take Neon Genesis Evangelion, I'm quite confident in saying that these are some of my favorite anime. Again, like similarly to Sangatsu no Leon, I'm confident with saying that this is one of my favorite animes of all time. And this is why, and I just lay out an entire list of analysis as to why. Senenjoyu obviously has those points. Senenjoyu, or The Millennium Actress, being a movie by Satoshi Kon, I feel like I've learned about him through watching a movie that isn't particularly about him, and more of how he directs and creates such a story, because the thing about Zen and Joyu is And I'll probably say, if I ever do review the show or anime movie on the podcast, and that is that Satoshi Kon, through the Millennium Actress, understands the storytelling of storytelling. That is too meta, but it's true. He literally tells the story of somebody telling a story about their own life within older sort of post-war Japanese society. I have fell in love with this movie, and I'm very, very intrigued to watch more Satoshi Kon works, because it just shows how much awareness in one movie. This movie doesn't get as much credit as I think it does, although I'm depending on MAL statistics, and it's not even in the top 1,000 in popularity on MAL, which really upsets me. Although it's ranked a decent amount, it's like 8.3 or 2, something like that, but this movie is one that you have to watch. If anything, that is probably going to be like on my on-the-fly recommendations. I know usually when people talk about anime movies, two on the list are usually something like Akira, or three on the list, Akira, Spirited Away, and Kimi no Na wa. And I recommend all three of those movies, but I think The Millennium Actress is one that needs to be added to that list for the purpose of just being phenomenally smooth and so aware of what's going on. I can't express how much I love this movie, and I don't want to ramble on for too much because we need to end the show. So anyway, that has been the In The Moment segment for this week. Hopefully you have enjoyed it. And if you have enjoyed the show, feel free to leave us that lovely review, whether that's on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Tell me how you feel about the show. Give us that lovely 5 stars or whatever number you feel like giving the show, because your opinion matters. Also, subscribe to the show if you want to get the episodes right when they do come out. So when you're on your phone and you're browsing through Reddit or you're browsing through Mail or whatever you're doing, and it's like whatever time it is, I don't know your time zone, obviously, when you check that time, you see the notification, GITM, new episode. You can watch it, listen to it. Sorry, this is not on YouTube, by the way. This is not on YouTube. You can listen to it right away. So again, feel free to subscribe to the show. Leave us the review. Check me out on Twitter as well. That is at GetInTheMecha. Get those updates on the show for not just when they come out, but also just other things. I like to review movies and things that I've watched sort of briefly within like a tweet or two. So feel free to check those out. You can sort of get an early insight into the show and what I'll be speaking about before I even create the episode. So you can sort of see my creative process a bit through my Twitter. And then finally, the blog, that is getinthemecha.home.blog. You can get the show notes on there. You can get the episodes on there. You can get brief summaries of the episode. You can learn a bit more about me on there as well. So that is getinthemecha.home.blog, getinthemecha.home.blog. Check that out and feel free to also message me. My email and all that is on there. Feel free to email the show. I can read your message out loud. I haven't said that in a very long time. Anyway, let's get back to the show and wrap up with some closing thoughts on Promare. So, what do I think of Promare? That is the ultimate question. I rated it a 9 on MAL, so I think that, although isn't fully conclusive, indicates how I feel about this movie. I'm very confident that a lot of people like it, although I know why some people wouldn't. But at least on a personal perspective, let me not talk for other people. I liked this movie. I think Promare is a very confident movie. Takes a lot of risks. It's out there. It's not something that everybody's used to. Some people are used to the very structured literal narrative where things are sort of shoehorned in to beginning, middle, and end. And although Promare does have structure, let's not get that confused. Promare is still a structured movie, but it is very out of the box in regards to a very structured narrative. It, again, as I said, has structure, but it goes beyond that classic structure, similar to the likes of Kill la Kill that Nakashima and Imaishi have developed. It's a movie that just doesn't care about what people think. That's how I'd summarize it. It's not intentionally that, I don't think, but it's confident. It goes out there and does what it does best. I don't find the movie overly serious. It's a great amount of fun. So just to end today's episode, would I recommend Promare? Obviously, I would. I understand why people won't like it, as I've said, but if you like this movie, I'm very sure that you'll love it. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Getting the Mecha. That is episode 20 on the big 2-0 now. That is a nice achievement for us at Getting the Mecha. Thank you for listening to the show as usual. Next week is another fun episode. I'm really enjoying the episodes recently. We had the Tokyo Ghoul roast that's out at the moment now, but I'm ahead of you guys, so I'm in the future. But we had the Tokyo Ghoul roast, Evangelion making his comeback on the podcast, finally, Promare this week. Next week is going to be a 2019 anime OP review. So we'll be looking at the anime OPs of this year. I'll be basically talking about my top picks for 2019. And then after that, soon will be the decade review, as I promised. And then we'll kind of just get back to normal. I'm not planning to slow down anything for Christmas or New Year or anything like that. The podcast is going to go right through in 2020, no sort of Christmas break. I didn't really plan to do a Christmas episode, not going to lie, but whenever you are listening to this, if you are listening on Christmas, although no one will be, I don't think, but if you are listening to this on Christmas, happy Christmas. But by then we'll probably be returning to Attack on Titan, so be prepared for that. Anyway, I've rambled on long enough. I'm sure your ears are tired by now. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Have a lovely day, week, morning, whatever you're doing, and I will see you in the next episode. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows: Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and 8-Bit Title Screen by Joth.